Countess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy, adapted by Alan Sharp, with Claire Rushbrook as Tess, James Darcy as Angel, and Adam Godley as Alec.
Why? Be they not posting bands then?
Well, I'd rather be wed than wait, I reckon.
Oh, when they have a lifetime to be wed, to wait 6 weeks is nothing.
Tis a modern way. And our Mr. Clare's a modern young man.
I should not have thought Tess so modern.
I think she be in a daze that this has befallen her.
Daze best be let pass afore you take the step, I'm thinking.
To tell the truth, I think they'd be eager to come to grips. She'd be a ripen, our Tess.
That'll do, ye, Samuel Crick. A ripen indeed. Oh, I hope there'd be more to it than coming to grips.
So you have said yes to him, Tess?
Yes.
Going to marry him?
A gentleman?
How do it seem? Almost more than I can think of.
Nobody else is to marry him in the world. No fine lady. Nobody in jewels and gold, but she who do live like we.
Are you sure you don't dislike me for it?
I don't know. I don't know. I want to hate thee, but I cannot.
He ought to marry one of you.
Why?
Well, you're all better than I.
We? Better than you? No. No, dear Tess.
Oh, you are.
Get some water. She's upset by us, poor thing. Poor thing. There, Tess. You will think of us when you be his wife and how we told you that we loved him and how we did not hate you because you were his choice. We never hoped to be chose by him.
It is true, he ought to have Izzy already. I ought to make him even now. They would be better for him than I. All this good fortune may be scourged out of me afterwards by a lot of ill. That's how heaven mostly does. I will tell all my history to him. My mother is wrong. And let him despise me if he will, and let my mother think me a fool, but I will not keep silent and betray him.
Tess, I must speak with you.
Angel.
I had a dream. It was of that kind which will not let loose its hold, even if one wakes to be free of it. When you return to sleep, it awaits still. Have you ever had such a dream?
Indeed, not always asleep.
It was to begin with, but an enactment of the morning I carried you across the water. Do you recall?
Why, of course.
At first my dream was of that. That closeness. You were in my arms. Only you... You were not dressed as then. In truth, neither of us were. It was as if we were in the Eden state, knowing nothing of sin, even though we were unclothed. But the stream was a rising flood, which no matter how I strove, I could not pass over unless I released you. And I could not, for I feared if I did, you should be swept away.
Dreams are most real sometimes, and speak to us in their way.
Indeed, that is so. And this one did speak. And it was not until I gave up all attempts to go back to sleep that I understood what it was.
What was it?
I think the rising waters were the disapproval of my family.
Oh, Angel, I feared it must be so.
Not of you, Tess, for they do not know you. No, of my manner of presenting them with my resolve to marry you.
But they are right to disapprove of me, for I'm not worthy of you. I tried to tell you.
No more of this, Tess. You and me, we are one another's best. And in marriage we shall become that abler soul the poet speaks of. I must go to Emminster and set matters to rights with my parents and my brothers. Tess, what is wrong? Why do you look so downcast? You do not doubt that I love you.
No. No, I do not.
Nor do I that you love me.
Come now. Such doings will curdle the cream, you know.
You think her not good enough for me. But it is not so, Mother. When you come to know her, you will see that it is, in truth, the other way around. Compared to Tess, I am a kind of mimic of life. She is its very essence.
The question is not her common origins, Angel. You reproach your mother too harshly there. It is that we have never met your choice, and when we do, she will already be your wife.
And all I ask is that you greet her as such.
It is not too much for parents to care to know the woman their son is to make his life with. Her nature, her origins.
You may take my word as to her nature. As for her origins, she is descended from the D'Urbervilles, one of the most ancient families in England.
She is a D'Urberville?
Well, that is her line, though she speaks her name as D'Urberfield.
D'Urberville is so much nicer, don't you think?
Tess informed you of this connection?
No, I had it from Mr. Crick. And when I spoke of it to Tess, who I might say sets no especial store by it, for such is her nature, she told me her family had it from Parson Tringham of Marlott, whom I understand to be a notable antiquarian.
I know Parson Tringham. Indeed, it has been said of him that his zeal is more to such matters than his faith.
Well, I suppose I must put my best face on it. But it is a deprivation, Angel, not to come to know one's daughter-in-law by increments.
I think it will prove for the best, Mother. For having said that Tess is of considerable lineage, I must add that she is, in certain matters, untutored. I may say it is no small part of my delight in her that I shall have the opportunity to be a teacher as well as a husband.
Is she then to be a kind of experiment in husbandry?
You think that an unworthy goal? To wish to mould another to share one's interests and hopes?
It has a hint of presumption to it, but I do not doubt that you have chosen this unformed clay with great care. I think we must trust Angel in this matter, my dear, since it is upon him the main burden will rest.
I have said that I will put a good face on it, Edmund.
I know you shall. I wonder if now is the time to give Angel his godmother's bequest.
Oh, do you think so?
Well, my dear, her provisions were quite clear.
What is this? What bequest?
Your godmother, Mrs. Pitney, who always had such an excellent opinion of your potential and your prospects, left you, as well as the monies you presently enjoy, certain articles to be given to your wife on the occasion of your marriage.
Articles of what kind?
A necklace and matching earrings. Remarkable pieces. I cannot imagine she, Tess, will ever have seen, let alone worn, things of such quality.
I'm sure they will suit her very well.
Well, I can assure you both that these jewels, however striking, will enhance my Tess no more than she will them.
There, there, Violet, do not take on so. Angel, let us leave your mother to search out your wedding gift. It is a grave matter for a mother to make way for a wife, far exceeding what a father may feel. To your happiness, my dear son. Is there any way in which I might be of help to you?
Why, I think you've already aided me, Father, by your example and affection.
I meant in regard to the state of marriage. For all your love of Tess, I am sure that you'd cross this threshold with some trepidation. For unless I am mistaken, you are not widely experienced in matters of the fair sex.
Indeed, it is true. I've never been in love. Nor have I had those other associations young men sometimes contract.
And you are none the worse for that ignorance. And since, of course, your wife will be equally uninformed, it can sometimes prove a trial for sensitive souls, if I may offer a suggestion.
It would be most appreciated.
Prayer.
Prayer?
Upon your wedding night, if you lead your wife in prayer, I think you may find it most beneficial. Ah, that will be Cuthbert. Yes, you will find that taking the lead in this manner will be of a great comfort to your wife, for she, as a woman, must look to you for reassurance. Cuthbert, we are in the study.
Who is this fellow who is going around the countryside painting biblical texts on every available surface?
Hello, Angel.
Ah, yes, I have spoken with him.
I hope you told him to desist from...
What? Preaching the word of God?
Fellow's not ordained, Father.
No, but he is of good family, educated, and in the grip of some profound impulse to serve God.
Well, I'm sure there are more efficacious ways than daubing text on property walls.
He had a conversion, Cuthbert. I think those of us who have always had faith do not appreciate the revelation that the convert experiences.
I think that's how I feel about Tess. I thought my life was quite full, indeed overfull.
Who is Tess?
Tess is the woman your brother is going to marry.
Marry? Who is she?
Well, strange to tell, but do you remember the time when you, Felix, and I went walking? Well over a year ago, when I was looking for a farm to apprentice at?
Oh, yes. What has that to do with you getting married?
Well, do you remember we stopped at a field where some girls were dancing? And I stayed behind while you two walked on? Well, the maid I danced with that night was Tess Durbeyfield. And 'tis she I am to be wed upon.
Oh, God, bless my soul. You should tell your mother this directly. It will reconcile her as nothing else, for it has all the marks of God's will upon it.
Oh, sing, dear Tess. My husband soon-to-be shall sit next.
Dan for it, Tess, with fiddles and flute and dance.
And we would have, saving Mr. Clare would not hear of it.
Once his Tess to himself, I reckon. Yeah. Not all us lummocks twirling her about.
Here the angel coming. Oh, where's he gone at?
Out to see his parents. Mr. Clare.
Goodness, this is a surprise. My parents are won over, Tess.
They are.
Entirely.
To Mr. Clare and Miss Tess and their future happiness.
Oh. And may all their troubles be little ones.
Oh. And good sport they're getting.
Oh, no.
Who be writing to, Tess?
Oh, a relative. Tell them my news.
Well, I say 'tis more romantical to marry so quick and never wait on banns.
Aye, for with banns there'd be chance for someone to object. That's you and me, eh? For our love of Angel.
Yeah, I should have liked to have been a bridesmaid, I should.
Oh, I could not bear it, not for all my love of Etas. Oh. I should cry or faint away.
My dearest Angel Clare, I write this to you because I can no longer live with this terrible hope in, and yet conceal the thing that holds me from such joy as I never in my life hope to know.
Oh. Have you and Mr. Clare been yarning all this time?
He wanted a little advice for his wedding night. That's all. Oh.
Oh, weary. I comes to bed to sleep.
Sleep on, then.
What advice?
You know.
Well, from what I recall of our wedding night, you'd be no one to give advice. What did you tell him?
I told him what we well knowed. That it is for the man to seem certain, and the maid may feel assured.
Ye be best to leave such things alone, Samuel Crick. For as I recall, 'twas me as led ye through the wood the first time. And I should expect no less of Tess Durbeyfield.
What if he be there and read it directly? The sooner read, the sooner resolved. Be of courage, girl. What be done right cannot come out ill.
Mm-hmm. Angel?
Oh, what be wrong, Tess?
Oh, nothing. I was dreaming.
Of Angel, I warrant.
Oh, yes, I should be late for skimming.
Morning, Tessie. Wife-to-be.
You look troubled, my angel. Did you?
Have you... Not troubled at all, my dearest Tess. Just impatient for our wedding day. Well, the milk is await.
Oh, surely if he had read my letter, he should have spoke of it. Why did he not read it?
Angel Clare from now on. Goodness, girl. You look as if you'd seen your grave.
Oh, Mrs. Crane.
Poor girl. She'd be beside herself with it all.
Well, Tess, the day is here at last.
I'm so anxious to talk to you, Angel. I want to confess all my faults and blunders.
No, no, we can't have faults talked of. You must be deemed perfect today at least, sweet. We shall have plenty of time hereafter, I hope, to talk over all our failings.
But it would be better for me to do it now, I think, so you could not say...
Well, you shall tell me anything. Say as soon as we are settled into our lodging. Not now. I, too, will tell you my faults then. But do not let us spoil the day with them. They'll be an excellent matter for a dull time.
Then you do not wish me to, dearest.
I do not, Tessie, really.
Do you take this man, Angel Clare, to be thy wedded husband?
I do.
You may kiss the bride.
Picture.
Oh, you do set each other off so.
She's a dear girl, Mr. Angel.
She is, Mrs. Craig.
But can you forgive me? I know you both do love him so.
Oh, he would never have married us, Tess. We know it.
Oh, aye. Farmer best have a farmer's wife, not some flibbity gibbet who knows only the cost of clothes.
Blessing on thee. Mrs. Clare.
Oh, Mrs. Craig, tis a miracle to hear my name spoke so.
Then we shall see thee in a week, lad.
In a week, yes.
So likely enough you may need another holiday after thee labours.
Ah, here we are.
Oh, Angel. It's a very grand sort of place.
Well, I thought to come here because, apart from its seclusion, it has close by a windmill. Still operative if rarely used. And I should like to study it. Whoa there! Oh, for I believe windmills are a valuable addition to any farm. Not simply to grind corn, but for the motive force they provide for a number of tasks. There is, I confess, another reason for the choice.
What might that be?
Well, I'm reliably informed that the house once belonged to your ancestors, the D'Urbervilles.
Oh.
Is it not auspicious that we begin our married life where distant relatives of yours perhaps once dwelt?
Well, I'm not so concerned with them, Angel, that they have not proved so beneficial to me.
No? How so?
Oh, it is a tangled sort of tale.
Ah, Mistress Cale. This is my wife, Mrs. Clare.
Come in, do. We're all prepared for 'ee. I did not think you would do much entertaining, so I've left downstairs alone, excepting for the kitchen. But upstairs, be ready. This be the best bedroom in the house. It has kindly light in the mornings when 'tis most needed, and has its own little parlour. And I've laid a fire in the hearth as it grows chill when the sun goes.
My, what a grand-sized bed.
Oh, it'd be big enough for three, but you shall not get lost in it. And there'll be a water closet there, right handy when nature calls in the middle of the night. And hot water you may get from the copper in the kitchen, and Mr. Kale shall bring you fresh eggs and milk of a morning.
See, Tess, there is the windmill I spoke of.
Oh, why? Looks all derelict, though.
I'm told it still turns. I'll light the fire to give the place some cheer.
Well, my dear, I hear ye be one of the old d'Urbervilles.
Oh, so it is said by some.
Well, then ye should be at home here.
I want to thank you, Mrs. Kale. Everything seems in order. Don't you think, my dear?
Oh, aye, most agreeable.
Well, then, I wish ye joy of each other.
Are you cold, my dear?
Oh, my darling husband. Oh, to say those words here in our own room, our first room, my darling, dear angel husband.
I have something for you.
Something more than thy name.
It is an heirloom, given me by my godmother for my wife.
An heirloom?
Go on, open it.
But I have no gift for thee, angel.
You are all the gift I need.
As ye be for me, but whatever is it?
Open it.
Oh, what a sight. These cannot be for me.
Here, try them on, dearest. My heavens. How beautiful you are.
Angel, these are too precious.
Well, you would not wear them to milking, but they suit you to perfection. To us.
To us. Angel, say from the poem, the part about the abler soul.
Ah, yes. When love with one another interanimates two souls, that abler soul, which thence doth flow, defects of loneliness controls. Do not cry, my dearest.
Oh, tears of happiness.
I wish you to feel no apprehension. Not on this night.
Oh, I do not. I'm here with you, where I could never have hoped to be, your wife. Oh, angel, it is as if all my life has been but the part before this. As if my life truly begins now, here, this night, in this room.
Affectionately put, Tess. But your life till now is what made you, Tess. The Tess I love. As my life till now has similarly formed me.
Oh, but I express myself poorly. I only mean that tonight is the happiest of my life.
Do you remember what we said to each other this morning? About telling our faults? We spoke lightly, but for me, it was no light promise. I want to make a confession to you, love.
You have to confess something.
You did not expect it. Now listen to me carefully, because I want you to forgive me. And don't be indignant with me for not telling you before, as perhaps I ought to have done.
But I cannot imagine.
That is because you think too highly of me.
No, not too highly.
You must first hear me out, my dear. My confession, Tess, is that on this night I do not come to you entirely inexperienced.
Oh, Angel, you need say nothing more.
Please, I must. It's not pleasant,
well,
but...
Well, then do not say it, for in truth, Angel, I do not care.
But you must. I mean, you must know me as I am, and not just as you imagine me to be.
You will not tell me anything that will make you less my love. That I know. But tell me if you must.
Yes, yes. Before I came to my decision to be a farmer, I went, as many an uncertain man before me has done, to London, to see if the great metropolis might somehow define for me which road I should follow. But alas, in the course of my few unhappy weeks there, and largely as a result of that state of mind, I formed a liaison with a woman. It was, I can assure you, devoid of proper feeling. It was rather, no matter how repugnant this must sound, of a purely carnal nature, in which curiosity and opportunity were paramount. Happily, I awoke to a sense of my folly, and I came home. I've never repeated the offence, but I felt I should like to treat you with perfect frankness and honour, and I could not do so without telling this. Do you forgive me?
Oh, with all my heart.
Well, then we will dismiss it once and forever. Too painful as it is for the occasion, and talk of something lighter.
Angel, I am almost glad, because now you can forgive me. I have not made my confession. I have a confession too, remember? I said so.
Enough of such talk. 'Tis I who am unworthy, but now I am forgiven. It relieves me greatly. Oh, Tess, you are so very lovely by the firelight.
Let me ask your forgiveness as you ask mine.
Well, then, out with it, wicked little one.
Perhaps, though you smile, it is as serious as yours. Or more so.
It can hardly be more serious, dearest.
Oh, it cannot. No, it cannot. I will tell you now. I tried to tell you before we wed. I wrote a letter, which I put beneath your door.
I received no letter.
Oh, no, for the rug in your room swallowed it, and you could not see it. And I found it next day, and I took it as a sign that I should say no more. I knew it was wrong, but I was so afraid. But now you see how you have given me the chance to amend my lack of faith.
What was in this letter?
It told of what befell me before I came to Talbothies.
Befell? What befell you?
I was in the employ of a woman whose son took advantage of me.
What kind of advantage?
He forced himself upon me.
Who was this man?
It is no more important than who your woman is or was.
No, that is different.
Perhaps, but no more important.
What was his name?
Stokes. Stokes d'Urberville. Alec.
D'Urberville? He was kin to you?
No kin. His family bought the name to add to their own. He was nothing to me.
Did you make a charge against him?
No, I left the service of his mother as soon as I could, in conscience, do so.
In conscience? Why, if your conscience was clear, was that not immediately?
Well, I served his mother, who was blind, and done me no harm.
So you remained there, where you had been forced?
Angel, why do you speak so? Are we not equally asking forgiveness? You for what you did out of loneliness, I for what was done to me.
You should not have told me this.
Then why did you tell me? There was no prospect I should ever know of such a thing.
I wanted you. I wanted to... Have you ever seen him again?
No! I hate him!
Still? You still hate him. If it is all past, why do you still hate him?
Because my life was ruined by him until now.
How ruined?
I became pregnant.
Oh, say it isn't true. No, it isn't true.
It is true.
And where is this child?
He died. Angel, forgive me. Say you do.
Enough. Enough.
Say you forgive me as you are forgiven. I forgive you, Angel.
Yes, you do.
But you do not forgive me?
Oh, Tess, forgiveness does not apply. You were one person. Now you are another.
Angel, what do you mean? Do you know what this is to me? I have been hoping, praying, to make you happy. I thought that you loved me, my very self. If it is I that you love, how can you look and speak so? How can you stop loving me?
Sit down. Sit down, you are ill, and it is natural that you be so.
Angel, am I too wicked for you and I to live together?
Stop! I have not been able to think about what we can do, Tess. I cannot stay in this room with you. I will walk out a little way. Possessed you to commence such a tale, to draw out of hiding that which best were hid. A child. Dead child. How can that ever fade? So concerned to reassure her, to play the rake. It is as if you were cuckolded by fate itself for pretense and presumption. But a child.
Angel, come to me. Angel, save me from this horror.
I cannot.
Do not say you cannot, for no one else can.
I cannot. I cannot see you as once I did.
But I am the same, Tess.
Not to me. I am to blame, I acknowledge, for what I told you when I might have said nothing. And I know you tried to tell me in different ways, and according to your account did, in the letter I did not receive. But had I received it, had I read it,
you would not have married me.
I cannot say. I don't know. Likely not.
Why, then this were all false?
Fate has been unkind.
Twas well, I think, since I am what I am and not what you imagined. You must put me away, then.
I cannot put you away.
Well, if you have cause, as surely you feel you do.
I have a father who is a clergyman and two brothers under orders and a mother for whom divorce would be an unbearable stigma. I cannot put you away. We are but married one day. I could never explain it.
They are Christians. They may find it in their hearts.
Never. That cannot be. I must go away.
And what must I do?
You. You must go home.
Oh. Home? Where will you go?
I will say to my family I am engaged on some exploration to come by a farm, and you remain behind till there is a satisfactory outcome.
Why should they not think I would go with my husband on such a search?
Because I must go abroad. To Argentina or to Brazil.
So far? You must go so far from me.
Of course I shall provide for you.
How long shall I wait?
Perhaps upon reflection I may find I can adjust myself. I will send for you. But until then you must not seek me out or my parents. Is that understood?
Oh, Angel, I do not know that I shall ever understand anything ever again. Hello, Mother.
Tessie! Why did you not say you was coming home?
Tess?
Is thy husband wee? Oh, what a state ye be in! Have ye walked?
Tess? Are ye married now?
Oh, girl! What be a mess? You never, Tess. On thy wedding night. Oh, you foolish, foolish girl. Why ever did you do that?
Because he confessed to me a like thing.
Tess. Men say such as much in conceit as contrition.
Nay, not Angel. He begged my forgiveness for it, and I gave it gladly, and that freed me to tell him that which hurt me to hide from him.
So you thought to ask his forgiveness? Oh, girl. Ye are too good. What must he do to learn men's ways? First that one, now this.
Oh, they are not the same. Do not compare them.
Where is he now, thy husband?
Will we be apart for now till he settle his mind?
Poor man, that his mind be unsettled. This will kill your father. That poor foolish man has been holding court at Rolliver's like a d'Urberville of old, paying the bill. Talking nonsense as how this Clare fellow should take his name and refound the family.
I think the sorriest thing that ever befell us was that foolish talk of Parson Tringham. It's been a curse on us all.
What are you to do, Tess? For one thing is for sure, he cannot stay here.
Mother, be this not my home?
You would not have any peace here. All Marlott knows of this well-to-do marriage. Think of thy poor father. Looky, John. Tess has come to pay us a visit.
Evening, Father.
Be thy husband with thee?
No. No, he could not come at this moment.
Does not think himself too good for us, I hope.
No, it be his business as keeps him.
I hope he knows who he is married into, is all. Is my supper set?
Aye. Tess shall fetch it.
You'll excuse me, Mother. I'm weary from my journey and must rest. Good night, Father.
Did he not send her by carriage, his newed wife? What sort of a husband is that?
Sit down, John Doe. Oh,
cannot come to pay his respects, sends his wife afoot. Well, at least she be married.
Ah, Izzy.
I heard tell as you was come by.
To gather up my things.
So you be leaving us for good?
Yes. Yes, I'm going abroad.
Be Tess with thee, sir?
No, she's not. Tess told me that you cared for me, Izzy. You and Retty.
Oh, aye, sir, we do.
And that you would have married me in her stead if I had asked.
Sir, she should not have told thee so. 'Tis to her shame.
'Tis no shame to love, Izzy. Perhaps I should have married you.
You must not say such, Mr. Angel. 'Tis not right to Tess.
Not right to Tess? Well, what if I were to tell you? Izzy, I'm on my way to Brazil. Izzy, if I should ask you to come with me this minute, now, would you come?
Why do you ask me this that cannot be? Look, God forgive me, Tess. I should go with thee.
Perhaps you love me more than she does.
Mr. Angel, Retty and me together could not love you more than Tess.
Oh, God. God forgive me. Tess. Izzy, forgive me.
What has befallen thee, Tess?
Well, Tess, ye have come good, as I always knowed he should.
Well, you must take care of thyself, Father. I told you I have an ailing heart.
Oh, a sore heart, not an ailing one. Doctors cannot see past their notions. I had a sore heart, but now tis soothed that my girl has come good.
Hmm? See then that ye come good.
Mm.
Goodbye, Father. Do not let Father drink all, Mother.
I have kept back the great part, never fear. And you have enough for thee, do ye, Tess?
I shall not need so much.
And likely your husband shall come to his senses when he has time to think on it.
I fear he will not recover. He has such high ideals. Walk with me, Liza. Goodbye, Mother.
Oh, what a sight to see you set out on the road again.
Oh, there, Mother.
Oh, goodness.
Will you keep my little lad's grave tidy, Liza Lou?
You know I shall. Tess, do you still love him? Angel, I mean.
Oh, I have no choice in that. 'Tis not a shift you take on and off. When you mingle with another, when you make the abler soul, why, you're part of the other and not whole yourself.
I think I should fear it be so attached.
Well, aye, that be wise. Fear it till it come. He must bear it after.
The chances are infinite, I am assured, of accomplishing a fortune. Why, I may possess 10,000 acres there for the price of 100 or so here.
But Brazil is so far away, Angel.
Aye, Mother. At some remove from Emminster.
Where is your wife?
My wife, Tess. She has gone to her family to make her farewells.
Then we may hope to meet this paragon before you leave?
There may not be time for that.
Really, Angel? It is as if you were ashamed of her.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he means you are hiding your wife under a bushel, brother.
I have nothing to be ashamed of.
Cuthbert and Felix speak over hastily. Of course you are not ashamed of your wife, but you must confess.
I have nothing to confess, nothing. It is only that I prefer you to meet her when she is more settled in her estate of matrimony. For there is more of a gap in manner and custom than she is comfortable with. It is her wish, indeed, that she put off meeting with you until she has smoothed certain rustic ways and is more able to converse and exchange. There's nothing to be ashamed of in that.
No, indeed.
And in token of this, she has asked me to return these to you to keep until she feels she more becomes them.
Oh. Why, that is most modest of her.
Not that she did not suit them. She suited them most gloriously. Against her skin they shone so... Have you ever had the experience to find you are not who you thought you were? It has the most remarkable consequence
of making everyone else seem other than you had imagined.
My dear boy, this journey you are to embark on, are you sure it is well judged?
Well, to go to a place where you are not known is almost to be reborn, don't you think? Especially if you're not who you took yourself to be. Before ye can enter the kingdom, ye must be born again. Oh, is that not the case?
Oh, angel. Oh, my angel.
Oh. There. You think you can grub out these turnips?
I do, sir. I've done it before.
Go on, then. Let's see you. You be not such a frump as you look. Why, under all this harden, I warrant ye be a well-formed lass.
There.
Well, one turnip be one thing. We shall see how you do. I shall send a mule up by and by, but for now, you may grub on. What be thy name again?
Tess. Tess Clare.
Aye. Well, mind you don't cut them too close. I'll not pay for a cut turnip.
Best not blister, or you'll never hold the acre.
How will I keep them from blistering? Marion, is that you?
Why? It'd be Tess d'Urberville.
Do not call me by that cursed name.
As you like. Well, well, I have thought on thee a time or two, and what became of thee. And now I see 'twas much as myself. How come ye ended up here, a pretty poor like you?
Not so much women's work as once was, I reckon.
Thought our old master might have set you up someplace, like one of them songbirds. Well, I am glad to see ye, Tess, though 'tis a pity for such as you to come to this Starve Acre place. That Master Alec, he couldn't help himself. All over ye was, paying compliments and promising presents, till you thought yourself all made up and he's special. Then once he had it, why, he took no pains of ye again. Oh, gin be the devil's drink for certain. And he had hasty ways, did Master Alec, coming at ye when his old blind mother was there. Mind you, I think she saw more than she let on.
Oh, no, thank ye.
She'd be dead now, as I hear. He was wise to go when you did, else he should have had you begging for crumbs.
I should never have begged for him. Not him.
Well, you might have done better. For in truth, he had more of a fancy to you. Oh. I envied thee that night, I may tell thee.
Envied? You'd be ill-advised then.
Have you ever seen him since you left?
Never. I hope I never shall.
She said he took strange after his mother died and sold up the chase. He'd be likely gone to foreign parts.
Well, what a thing if he were to meet my husband.
He have a husband?
Marion, I am so tired. I must sleep.
You lay with him but once and got pregnant.
Not lie with him.
Well, however. And you never told him of it?
Never.
But you told this husband of it? Do not look so fierce. It makes no sense to say not to him as did he wrong, and yet tell him as did not.
I loved him, my husband. Did not want to lie to him.
Except it sent him from me. So where's the truth that he saved to this dead-end place?
You're not paid to stand there wagging thy jaws.
But how can ye still love such a husband as left you on your wedding night?
I know not how, save that I do. When you've been let love with all thy heart, you would not soon wish to cease, for truly it turns this miserable world into a shining place.
Tell me true, Tess. Did you never care for Alec? Not one bit?
I pitied him.
That'd be the rabbit pitying the stone. One who would have you as you would not,
and one who would not as ye would have. Why, I don't know which be worse. No, thy husband be worse, for he took vows and now you are deserted. Penniless.
Angel left me money, that my family have more need of than I, and I may write to him through his family for more if I must. But I will not shame him more than I have already done.
Oh, ye be too good for this world, Tess Durbeyfield. So ye must not expect other than to be broken by it.
I do not fear to be broken. I only fear that I may never see my angel again. If that were so, I should step out of this world and never miss it. Mostly it be a place of ruin.
God forgive ye, girl, to talk so.
'Tis I as should forgive him, more like. And I do. Sometimes.
You should go and see them in-laws of yours, Tess, and tell them how their son has treated you.
The man should be arrested for defacing private property.
Father is too lax. If it were slogans of political cant, he would not hesitate. But because they are scriptural texts, he finds himself constrained.
Next, he'll vandalise the church walls themselves.
There, that may be covered, sirs.
No, it still shows through. It's the damnable red he uses.
Yes, I think it needs another coat.
Excuse me, sir, but is this the vicarage of Reverend Clare?
Yes, it is.
If you have come a-begging, there is an almshouse at Framley, not 4 miles on.
Near a sixth to Framley.
Here, my good woman, take this.
I've not come a-begging.
Ah, good work. Progresses apace right there.
I do think it needs another coat, Father.
Yes, it persists strangely. Come unto me, all ye that labour and are heavy laden, and I will give thee rest. A most special text. 'Tis a kind of blasphemy to cover it over.
Who was that woman? Oh, I cannot meet them thus. 'Tis too much that they think me a beggar. His brothers, his mother, his father. You should not have left me so, Angel Clare, that I am but a wife in the disguise of a beggar. You wronged me, and they would have wronged me more, I could tell it from their faces. Where am I to turn to now? Am I to walk to Framley the 4 miles that be six to beg in earnest?
I speak to you tonight, not as an ordained minister, not as one removed from life's temptations, but as one who has known the need of forgiveness, known the need of compassion, as one who has sinned, and sinned knowingly, willfully, happily.
Excuse me.
There'll be plenty of room to get nearer.
Do you know, my dear friends, what a great fissure of the soul the witting, willful sinner suffers? And the torment that he endures who perseveres in sin against the cry of conscience. I knew I did wrong. Indeed, I gloried in it. Took my sustenance from it. And those I sinned against, I put out of my mind and sight.
Excuse me, please.
Stand by. You can hear well.
Do not prevent her. Let her come. For her need might be such as can bear no thwarting. Come to the front. For salvation reaches down and plucks up the sinner from the abyss. But you must admit your need. Tear away the blindfold of denial. Stare into the mirror of true remorse. As I have done. And as I do. As I do each day. Tess! Tess, please, Tess. It's me, but I'm not the one who betrayed you. I am not that man. I am born over.
Then leave me be, for I do not know you.
But I know you, and I know what hurt, what pain I caused. Tess.
Tess, I know of the child. I've heard your trouble. I've heard your name spoken. I was told that the child, our child, had died. Why did you never write and tell me?
Write to you? Why would I write to you, whom I despise? Who wronged me? Why would I write to one who cared only for his own satisfaction?
'Tis true, that man might have tossed such a letter on the fire. But Tess, this one would not. Believe me, Tess. For my soul's sake, believe me. Tess, where are you going?
Where I came from.
Let me go with you. I want to explain. Let me, Tess. Not as amends. There are no amends. In God's name, have a little charity, Tess.
Damn you, Alec d'Urberville. Damn you. For you have damned me.
In episode 3 of Tess of the d'Urbervilles, adapted by Alan Sharp, Tess was played by Claire Rushbrook, Alec by Adam Godley, and Angel by James Darcy. John d'Urberville was Keith Barron, Joan d'Urberville was Imelda Brown, and Liza Liu, Lindsay Marshall. Reverend Clare was Robert East, Mrs. Clare, Joanna Wake, Felix, David Thorpe, Cuthbert, Kenny Blythe, Izzy Pruitt, Alison Pettit, and Retty Priddle, Rachel Gleaves. Mr. Crick was Sean Baker, Mrs. Crick, Annette Badland, Marion, Janice Aqua, Mrs. Kale, Helen Ayres, and Farmer Groby, Wayne Foskett. The composer was Sylvia Hallett, and the director was Mary Peat.